You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Three games into the Bruins-Leafs playoff series. Three great games. I think game three in Toronto was the most physical game of the series. I think the teams combined for over 100 hits before the second period even concluded. A lot of storylines to take away from this game, but it's always very fun getting a win north of the border, especially when you can silence that crowd in Toronto. Bridget and Scott, how are you feeling after that game? Are you feeling more confident with things, or just one day at a time here?
Hey, you got to feel more confident. That's, you know, nature of the playoffs. You're up in the series again. On the hits, listen, that was a very physical game. Someone's got to do something about this hit counter up in Toronto, because that was a really physical game. It was not a 137 combined hits game. I'm sorry.
No.
Guys, there were not more than two hits per minute. and I remember the Bruins' highest total in the regular season was also a game in Toronto where there were 101 combined hits. And I was like, there were maybe half of that. Like, I think they're really jacking up the totals up there.
Somebody's definition up there is a little different than the rest of the league.
Is that why Toronto's a top three team in the NHL in hits this year?
I definitely think that's part. Like, Toronto is a physical team. I think you see that in the series. But I do think that's a part of it. I do think it certainly seems like Toronto's a place that overestimates the actual number of hits.
Yeah, I thought it was weird when I think Jake DeBrus had like eight hits yesterday. I was like, did he?
he may have. He was playing very, very physical for his standards. But your point's...
He's had a great series so far.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say your point's valid about the potential upticks. But either way, he played really, really strong. So why don't we go into the opening shifts right away, Bridget? Why don't we start with you?
Okay, so mine has to do with some of the lineup changes, which here we are after game three, and we saw the typical Montgomery shuffling of the lines. The only line he didn't change was the fourth line, because that line had been pretty effective, and he rotated pretty much everything else around. He took hers like out of the lineup. He put Lauri in. Peaks out with an injury week to week, which means we're probably not going to see him till at least the second round, if that's what happens, and Weatherspoon goes in for the first time in the playoffs. So Lauri and Weatherspoon both made their debuts, and Van Riemsdyk also came in for Lauko. And I want to talk about some of the highs and lows of those guys in the game, but I'll just start off first with the fact that Brian finally got to see his D pairs that he wanted. Besides, he wanted Weatherspoon Peak, but obviously that's not possible. Mm-hmm. So he got the Lauri McAvoy pair and the Lindholm Carlo pair that he wanted. And we're not quite there yet, because we haven't got to you guys opening shifts, but I know there's a lot to say about how the D pairs looked, how Lauri looked, and Van Riemsdyk couldn't buy a goal, but came so close.
Yeah, my opening shift is about Brad Marchand just taking over. You know, game two, I think we saw Austin Matthews step up and take over. You kind of thought, all right, well, if anyone on the Bruins is going to do that, you look at David Pastrnak first, right? You know, their best player. Said it was Brad Marchand, and it was just a vintage Marchand performance in every way. Dominant at 5-on-5, led the team in shots on goal, led all forwards in penalty. He played over 4 minutes on the penalty kill. PK goes 5-for-5. Scores twice, including the game-winning goal. Sets up DeBrus' goal on the power play. Really just did it all. Gets under the Leafs' skin. We'll get into Sheldon Keefe's comments after the game, but the Maple Leafs coach is whining about Marchand getting calls or not getting called for trips, going out with Bertuzzi all over the ice all game long. So really, like, every element of just kind of a vintage Marchand performance, and in a game where you needed it, you needed someone to step up, and the captain does it.
Absolutely. Can't wait to dive more into that. For my opening shift, I just thought that that was probably the most satisfying playoff win I can remember, at least dating back to the cup run in 2019. There's something about playing Toronto where you're the center of the hockey universe, and as great as it is to win a game at TD Garden in game one, and not to take away anything from satisfying wins in recent years against, Florida or Carolina or the Islanders, despite how those series ended, you have to go back for me pre-bubble to find a playoff game where you felt so, I don't know, not vindicated, but just so like justice was served a little bit. Players you can't stand on Toronto, like Domi and others, kind of, they've been trying to face wash, Marchand all series, get in Swayman's face between periods and, shoulder him. And obviously Brad Marchand's villain number one up in Toronto. And Scott, to your opening shift, like, just the way the Bruins won the game, the players that stepped up in doing so. And I just, that clock wound down last night. And that's the thing I thought of first thing, was just what a satisfying playoff win. And, the most satisfying I can recall since, like I said, probably around 2019 or so.
Yeah, it was a complete game. We touched on the physicality. We touched on Marchand being, villain number one. Swayman, excellent in goal again. And obviously we'll get into that. He's now 5-0 against the Leafs this season. And, even for a pro rotation person like me, like, that is hard to ignore. I thought just about everyone played well. I have some beefs with, I guess, if we're going to call the top line, with Pastrnak and Zacha. Still kind of waiting, not kind of, you are still waiting for them to get going 5-on-5. It did not happen in this game, but just about everything else, worked. It just about everyone else showed up, brought the physicality, your power play, you dominate the special teams battle again, and that is turning into a huge storyline in the series. Bruins end up 2-for-3 on the power play, and one of those is the empty netter at the end, right? The Leafs take a late penalty, and then as soon as they get possession, they pull their goalie, so it's 5-on-5, but technically it's still a power play goal when the Bruins score. So even if you just want to say 1-for-2 and then compare that to the Leafs going 0-for-5, and 0-for-5 with only 4 shots on goal. Swayman had that one sequence where he made like 3 saves in quick succession. Outside of that, the Leafs only landed 1 other shot on goal on the power play. So just tremendous killing. And that really feels like something that are we doing a call-in show now?
Yeah, well, I did put up a bunch of polls, but I did not set up a number for people to just start calling Scott. So
should have just brought them
right
on
now. If you want, I can tweet out your number and see if people call in.
That was me, Scott. I was just trying to derail you. I'm sorry.
I actually don't even know who that was, so I should just like put them on and be like, hey, we're recording a Bruins podcast.
That's no. Okay. I was already interrupted by Melvin, so. Did you have anything else to say, or did you forget?
No, I think I was pretty wrapped up.
And I think we can't go that far without talking about the Sheldon Keefe comments about Marchand, because we've hit on Marchand having a great game. We've also hit on the Leafs having trouble on their power play, besides that one flurry, which, by the way, I thought they were going to score on, but Swayman was amazing. But after the game, Sheldon Keefe saying that, he starts out by saying Marchand's a world-class player, but then he's like, at his skills, but also basically at being a rat. He said at a gamesmanship and whatnot. So it came across as very complainy. Like it came across as also, he said he's really good at drawing penalties. He didn't draw a single penalty, and Marshawn always is the one that ends up in the box. His whole career, that's been what it's been like. It's like, have you not been watching the career of Brad Marchand at any point in time? And I saw him get a lot of heat for it on social media after, because it just didn't make a whole lot of sense to Bruins fans, for sure. I think to just like impartial fans as well. Maybe he should have gotten called for the Bertuzzi like leg sweep or whatever, but Bertuzzi was doing stuff too, so you would have had to take both of them. He was playing Brad Marchand playoff hockey, which is a little bit pesty and all sorts of stuff, like chirping and whatnot, but I think that's what makes him effective. He plays with a lot of emotion, and that's when he scores, and that's when he gets under people's skin. And probably Brian Wyatt was so satisfying was because you see him finally get to that level where we hadn't quite seen it yet this playoffs. You see really satisfying goaltending for Boston. You see secondary scoring with Trent Frederick. There was a lot of things to like, and that's probably why it felt like such a satisfying win, because it was a close game. And I don't know if you guys feel this way, but I didn't think the Leafs played poorly. I mean, the Bruins outplayed them, but I didn't think the Leafs played poorly.
Oh, I thought defensively, I thought Toronto had even strength. I thought they played fine. Like this is not the Toronto team of old, where you have Jake Gardner and insert Maple Leafs defenseman here who just turns the puck. Like they have, like, Joel Edmondson likes to block shots. Simone Benoit is a big body, tries to get a stick in there. Obviously, you still have Morgan Rielly, but Jake McCabe is a defenseman who likes, he tries to play the right way. Like the Toronto, this is what I was talking about earlier before when we broke down the series before game one. Like, it's a different Toronto team. So it's not that the Bruins can't have success against them in the playoffs and yet again beat Toronto in a playoff series. It's just going to have to be with a different formula. But yes,
ask you this question? Mm-hmm. Is the Bruins, because that seemed like not that the Bruins were perfect either, but like that was close to the Bruins A game. Would you agree? Or do you think
it's a good question, Bridget. And I think as a team, I thought that like over 60 minutes, you're going to have some hiccups, right? It's just going to happen when you have two good teams out there. I think as
period, there was like a stretch of like 12 minutes where they didn't a shot. So
Watherspoon had a couple of hiccups. Lori had a couple of hiccups, not enough for me to take either of them out of the lineup, but and nobody was, not one player was perfect, but as a team, to your question, was it an A game? It's close. I think for them to have an A game, like Pasternak needs to be clicking as well. And Zacha, like to Scott's point a minute ago. So besides that line, so I can't give the team a complete A game because that line wasn't going 5-on-5. But if they are, that's about all that was missing, in my opinion.
Yeah, I was going to say, it can't really be an A game when Pasternak is, quite frankly, like almost invisible most of the game. That line was really quiet, and they were on the ice for both of the Maple Leafs goals. Pasternak had just one shot on goal. He had eight other attempts that were either blocked or missed. But to me, that's kind of part, like, it's one thing if he misses because he's trying to like snipe a corner or whatever, but the blocks in particular really bother me. Like, there were a couple times where I actually thought he had a passing outlet and he forced the shot into traffic and it got blocked. So, it's a great sign for the Bruins that they're up 2-1 and that line still hasn't really gotten going 5-on-5. But until that line gets going, I'd say we still haven't seen the Bruins A game. Which, well, and again, is like actually encouraging that you're up 2-1 without really having that game yet.
Well, and think about it though, like Montgomery's trying to get them there. That was one of the things he did, was change that line. He put DeBrusk with them, which was not a common partner this season. Like DeBrusk, when it was, it's mostly been Zacha and Pasta without DeBrusk. DeBrusk has mostly found himself on Marchand's line towards the end of the season. So they split them up. They because DeBrusk's playing so well, the thought has to be, all right, he's doing everything right. He's winning pucks. Like, maybe he wins one, pops it out to Pasta, and Pasta gets going. And that, I assume that was the idea. So that line, he did try to spark with a shakeup.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
And it wasn't a one-for-one switch where they put Heinen with Marchand and Coyle. They actually brought Geeky up with Coyle and Marchand. Ironically, the Marchand game-winning goal was a pass from Heinen. I'm trying to remember if that was amidst a line change. I think it was, because Frederick was also out there. So curious to see if they stick with those lines in game four. My guess is they probably would. I thought they looked good. To your point, DeBrusk is playing well, and so maybe send him down because things are getting stale with Heinen and Zacha and Pasternak. And I thought putting Marchand with two big bodies and Geeky and Coyle, that helps you when puck battles down low. It helps you keep the puck down low. And for a smaller guy, Marchand is also really, really good at protecting the puck. So I thought the lines looked good. I'm curious to see if that sticks. And just one last point on, well, maybe not one last point. I'm sure we'll keep talking about him. But regarding Marchand, one of the other reasons why last night was such a satisfying win, and we talked about it, and you know, I mentioned it online before the game yesterday, but dating back to the beginning of February, in 35 games, Marchand only had 5 goals. So while he compiled some assists, I think he had like 18 assists or 23 points in that time. This Bruins team on paper, they don't have enough goal scoring talent for Brad Marchand to be scoring at that low clip. And so it was unanimous amongst Bruins fans, the Bruins themselves, like even Brad Marchand, everybody knows he had to get going on the score sheet, the goal score sheet. And not only did he do that last night, but for the first time in what seems like forever, it was, to steal what Scott said earlier, it was vintage Marchand. Like, to see 20,000 people at the Air Canada Center standing up wanting to throw their towels on the ice because Marchand, you know, quote unquote, trips Bertuzzi, which let's call it the way that it is. Bertuzzi also knew the situation and probably went down a little easily, but for, you know, you see Frederick go down and score and you're like, oh, this place is, they are so red faced right now. And it's just like, oh, here it comes. Yeah, here's
everybody
the pot stirring.
Everybody got caught watching Marchand, and Frederick just kind of snuck in. And
you could just see, like, he's making an impact in every single way. Now he's into the series. And then after he scored his goal to make it 3-2, which, again, talk about leadership. Toronto ties the game in the third period. Shit goal, off a leg, whatever. But they tie the game. The crowd's buzzing. Here comes Marchand a minute later, and just silences
even
the crowd.
28 seconds.
Yeah.
20. Well, it seemed like a minute because I was holding my breath after that low right turnover. But but he comes right back down and silences the crowd. And after that, now you start seeing him gain offensive zone entries. And now he's pulling up with confidence. And now he's making plays. And it's just like, uh-oh, it's starting to click. He's starting to get going now.
And by the way, on his empty net goal, he got that because he flipped over Bertuzzi, who was on top of him. He just like flipped him off and he scored. And it was him and Bertuzzi were going at it all night. I mean, he was asked about it after the game because the guys are actually friends now that they play together. Marshawn said we have similar interests and like they're actually friends, but it's funny to watch them play. It's very entertaining to watch those two guys go against each other. But I want to bring up a quote from Marshawn after the game because I guess there was observations in morning skate that Marshawn was fired up and then you see it transfer into game three. And he said, I woke up with that gratitude that it's a gift to play in the Stanley Cup playoffs. So I think that maybe he had a mental realization that he had, like, you're here, you got to make the most of it. And he said, I thought we elevated to another level and that we didn't have the other games.
Yeah, and he led the way. Montgomery after the game said, I can't say enough good things about the way our captain led us tonight. Or I can't say enough about the leadership by our captain tonight. Charlie Coyle went on and on about, how did Marchand set the tone? In every way possible, I think. And he talked about, his play, his scoring, but battling, not backing down, his leadership on the bench, the way he talks and keeps us engaged in that given situation, whatever it calls for. So he said, he added later, it goes beyond his play on the ice, which was exceptional tonight. It's on the bench, in the locker room, and his all-around leadership and character. Obviously things only get remembered based on the final result of a series, but like, that this could be like the kind of signature win that you add to an already impressive resume for Marchand that just really sticks out as like a game where he took over. And, I thought Geeky on that line with him and Coyle, I thought that worked well. That line was really good. Now, when Marchand's playing like that, like you could probably put me at right wing on that line and the line would still look pretty good.
Great net front presence.
I did like the line changes for the most part, and I actually would keep DeBrusk, Zacha, Pasternak together because at least DeBrusk is playing well. He scores again, so he's got 5 points in 3 games.
Leads the team.
Or is Marchand just ahead of him now?
I thought that DeBrusk had more, but let me.
I think Marchand's got 6 now, so I think he pulled one ahead of him.
He should get an assist on that Bertuzzi takedown for the Frederick goal too.
because like with that top line, I think it's just Pasternak and Zacha have to get going. Like at this point, I don't really think it's like a matter of you got to find the right fit on the left wing. It's like no, like those guys just have to get going. And I thought the new look third line, I thought Van Riemsdyk played well coming in. Not that he set the world on fire or anything, but I don't think he played himself out of the lineup. I thought moving Frederick to center, I think, forced him to get more involved. He had been too quiet the first 2 games, and you can't hide at center. You can't just drift out of the action. So I just felt like you saw him around the puck more, with the puck more. Mm-hmm. He scores that goal, which is obviously a soft one, but
yeah,
hey, he put the shot on net, so
it was a good hard shot too.
Yeah,
right. Like, and that's a good point, Scott. Sometimes it's Trent Frederick is one of those players where he needs to be involved in the game, in the fight, and to your point, when you jump into the fire every shift by playing center, your responsibilities skyrocket. Your awareness has to skyrocket. So I just think, I thought he played great. He was using his size.
He's got a little bit of that Marchand in him where he's a pest after whistles. And
he has that Marchand in him where when he flips a switch, he flips a switch. Like, it's very easy to tell when he's engaged and when he's not. And it's not that Marchand's not ever not engaged, but you can maybe a better way to word it is you can tell when he's going to have an impact on a game because you can just see it coming. And the whole Marchand stuff, it was alarming on one hand and not alarming on the other because his skating never seemed to deviate. He wasn't not keeping up with the plays. He looked like he was skating this whole time, but the puck on his stick, he didn't have confidence. Now he's got that going. And I thought Jake DeBrusk, I think that may have been one of the best games I've ever seen him play as a Bruin. And I mean, I'm talking about everything. Just he's scoring goals by going to the net. He's finishing his checks. He's very aware of where he is on the ice. He saved a goal with Yarncroc in the slot, lifting his stick on the power play. Just and it was one of those games where it's like, this is why at times I get hard on him, because I know what the kid's capable of. I think everybody is. That said, he's choosing the right time of year to do it. I'd rather do it in April than December, I suppose, if I had to choose one or the other. And then my last comment on, I guess, just on a smorgasbord of forward analysis right now, one optimistic viewpoint I have on David Pastrnak is that he was quiet in the first half of round one last year and then ramped it up the second half of the series. So it's, you know, we could probably dissect why he is quiet right now. He's got to simplify his game a bit, but if there's a way to look at it positively, this is how he started last year's round one. And we all know he turned it on as the series went along.
Yeah. And like, I definitely don't think it's a case of like not being engaged. I think we've seen him be physically engaged this whole series. And like, I thought he was again on Wednesday in game three. So, you know, it's not like he's just out there in cruise control, just drifting around. I think for whether it's, you know, pucks not finding him, line mates not finding him, him not quite being able to find his shot, or just not making, you know, the right decision with the puck. Like, I don't think it's really a lack of effort. It's just execution isn't there right now. So I would be more worried if it was like, wow, you don't even notice Pastrnak and he's just, you know, kind of going through the motions. Like, that would be more concerning to me. And I don't really think that's what I'm seeing.
No, and there was a few passes that made it to him that just weren't perfect, so he didn't get the shot off that he wanted. I don't know. By the way, did you think that ice yesterday looked awful?
It was definitely, it was a little choppy. Like, I'm trying to think, but yeah, there was some hopping pucks.
There was a lot. I felt like it was just bouncing constantly, and then I saw Weatherspoon just randomly tripped and fell over a divot or something. And I don't know, the ice looked bad. We were talking about this the other day, like if Boston's ice is any worse than other rinks, and especially in the springtime. And it seemed to me that Toronto ice was bad. I don't know. Maybe we should ask one of the guys next time we see him, but what they thought of the ice there. But just out of curiosity, really, honestly, not as like an excuse for any sort of, you know, bounces that didn't work out, but I'm just curious whether or not it was kind of messed up. I don't know how warm it was there yesterday, but who knows? I noticed a few times I was like, okay, the puck doesn't usually do that there. But yeah, I think that Pasta just, the puck didn't find him in the right places to have a shooting lane a lot of the times. I was watching, so obviously we watched Bruins post game. Then I went over and I watched the NHL Network, you know, after wrap up of all the games, and they were talking about a few shots that Pastrnak had where it was like, any other guy doesn't get that shot off. Like, there were times where he was trying to make the most of a tough pass. So it's not all on him, obviously. But you do have to free him up and get him in those lanes where he's got a better lane to the net to shoot. I guess him and Zacha both haven't been able to get to super high danger areas to score, except for that Zacha breakaway that he had shorthanded the other day, which, by the way, how many breakaways were they going to go on and not score? And how many posts were they going to hit with an empty net? That was they hit the post three times with an empty net before Marchand eventually scored into it.
Yeah. And I think with Pastrnak, it's more glaring yesterday that, it's to Scott's earlier point, it's not that he's not trying. It's not a lack of effort. I think it's a lack of maybe confidence right now. But you noticed it yesterday because the Bruins only had one full 2-minute power play, and it was right at the beginning of the game with a delay of game. So, by the way, if you listen to Toronto fans, the refs jobbed the Leafs. But yeah, that's a different conversation.
Not even close.
I mean, Toronto gets 5 power plays. The Bruins get 1, and then they get a half of 1 later in the game when Bertuzzi, you know, negates the Toronto power play they were already on. And then at the end of the game, the Tavares on McAvoy.
Oh yeah, they were so pissed about that one. They were very pissed about that one.
Bridget, Toronto Maple Leaf players, they don't go down easy at all. They don't dive. It's not like the whole league doesn't do it at all. It's just the Bruins, you know. But in any event, I think what I was saying about Pastrnak is I think the 5-on-5 production or lack of scoring chances, he didn't have any power play time. And sometimes when the Bruins
get... He's gotten less power play time.
Well, yeah. Yes, because the Bruins split up the two units. But I meant to say the Bruins team didn't have a lot of power play time yesterday. So maybe it's kind of why he didn't seem so dangerous at times, and there was more 5-on-5 play, and he's fighting it a bit at even strength. So yeah, I mean, Pastrnak and Zacha, if the Bruins continue to play for the most part like they did yesterday as a team, and Zacha and Pastrnak are going at even strength, I think that's the A game that the Bruins are looking for. Is that sustainable every game in the postseason? Probably not. But to what Scott said, it's a good sign that despite those two guys quiet right now, 5-on-5, the team's still performing. And Brad Marchand coming back to life, that's a huge factor. If Zacha and Pastrnak are struggling and Marchand is continuing to have that goal slump and not looking like himself, Toronto wins that game last night. But again, when one guy has to step up, and that's what Marchand did last night, they needed the most.